and welcome to episode 93 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the British superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who's a black belt in BS, but goddamn, we love him anyway. It's Tony Esmond.
I've got a number of sarcastic moves I might move a lot, use later.
Yeah. I'm sure you've got quite a few moves you're going to use. And also this week, we're joined by the artist of The Last Sheriff, Operation Boom, and he's one of the kick-ass comic book collective known as Reckless Hero. You may have heard us talk about them like once or twice. But and he's another returning guest. It's Mr. Chris Imber.
Hello.
Hey, Chris. Chris. Good to have you back, man.
Hi, guys. Nice to be back.
He's sitting there in his summer house, enjoying some port.
Yeah, have you really got a fucking summer house?
Yeah, I've just bought a new house. It's got one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, have you just moved, didn't you? That's nice.
That is nice.
Don't you be surprised, Dan.
That is nice.
You must all come in summer here.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be lovely.
Oh, guys, we can have an afternoon of Pims.
Yeah. Actually, go on the Riviera.
Yeah, that's right.
Men there. Ooh la la.
Did you just go ooh la la?
Yeah.
In the most butch way I've ever heard. Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
Yes, Chris is with us this week to talk about another one of our genre shows. It always sounds weird when I say it, but screw it. It's April, and it's genre-tastic on the Awesome Pod this week. And after the fun we had talking about Giant Monster Comics last week, which was a good laugh, wasn't it?
Yeah, yep. Very good. Was our guest. Zach, very good.
Yes, thank you very much, Zach, for joining us.
And Zach could double up on this episode as well. Obviously, we've got the ace, Chris Imber, but Zach knows his onions here as well.
I bet he's got a summer house as well.
Not as big as mine.
Or the summer house.
Yeah, none of us on the Awesome Pod have a summer.
Vince, I bet you've got a shed.
I've just got a bridge that I live under.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I was walking down my street today and someone's got a tractor in their front garden. And
really?
I thought I was going to take a picture of this and send it to Vince. So, look, me and you, we're closer than the same. People fucking gardens around here.
Cheeky bastard. Oh dear. Anyway, yes, as you can tell, it's going to be a feisty one this week, and as well it should be, because this week we're talking Kung Fu comics.
Yeah,
which is a bit of a broad term of it. Dan did say on the Twitter this week that it's kind of martial arts comics is what we're talking about, really, isn't it? As a whole, rather than just Kung Fu. But we thought, why not? We've been, unbeknownst to a lot of you out there, the three of us, well, the three hosts, not Chris. I mean, he's always listening to us, but we're totally aware. We've been talking about Kung Fu comics a lot recently, haven't we?
Yeah.
They just sort of, and we've got some good books to talk about. But, so, to start us off with this topic, I'll just ask a very simple question. Martial arts comics, do you like them?
Oh, I fucking absolutely love them. I've got to say, next to superheroes, probably my favourite.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Everyone knows my love for the Master Kung Fu series and all that sort of thing. But yeah, this is done well. I mean, I'm not a big manga fan, but I will read stuff like Crying Freeman, Sanctuary, Wounded Man, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I have to say, done well, a kung fu fight in a comic is the thing of beauty you've got to hear. Mm. You know, if you can show that motion and that sort of style, and especially when you go, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later with Iron Fist, but if you can draw something that is in form, so their proper form in relation to their their martial arts skill, then that is just a thing of beauty as well, I think, you know. Well, there's this Paul Gulacy, who is to me the epitome of the best martial arts artist out there. You know, the studies he used to do, and the form that Master Kung Fu used to take, and the villains in different sort of styles of Kung Fu, just beautiful stuff. You know, it's incredible stuff. People back in the 70s and 80s took it so seriously, but it was Enter the Dragon, to me, best martial arts movie ever. I'll ask you two guys in a minute, but that's so much came from that. That was our Star Wars. For the sort of 5 years that it lasted before Star Wars hit, that was the thing that kids talked about in the playground all the time.
It was absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and there's so many, there's not enough comics. There's a few that you don't sort of think about, but there's a few that, you know, that came out amongst this time, but there's not enough done, I think.
That's one of the interesting things when we brought up this topic, because, you know, as soon as you say Kung Fu comics, you think, yeah, you know, we're going to have so, you know, I'll be able to reel off a huge list of like loads of comics. And then when I thought about it, I thought, are they really martial arts comics? You know, it was a lot harder to pinpoint truly stand out books for me.
Personally. Yeah,
I don't know about the rest of you guys. I mean, there's also the classic ones. I think the boom period for it was when there was the boom period of the movies. I think there's a definite correlation between what was happening in cinema and what was happening in comics. Certainly in like the 70s, wasn't it?
Late
70s, early 80s. You know, if it was big in cinema, comics would follow suit.
I think you've got to realise that Shang-Chi came out 3 months before Iron Fist, so the two big ones came out within months of each other.
Yeah,
you know,
they were
really
was a few
more tapping
about. Into that sort of vein, weren't they?
They really were. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how recently had things like Enter the Dragon and stuff been out?
Yeah, when was it released? Out Enter the Dragon
73, and I think Five Fingers of Death, which we'll talk about in a minute, I think was 2 months earlier than that. That was the big one. I think it's called King Boxer over here. That was the big one that broke, and it was the one that was, if you look at it now, it's, well, it's hugely cheesy, King Boxer, but it's one of those.
Who's the star of that?
No one you'd know, dude. I can't remember the name, but I've got it in front of me, but it's no one of any huge note. But the King Boxer, it was a Shaw Brothers movie.
But it
was called, in America it's called The Five Fingers of Death, 1972, and in it there is an iron palm in it.
We've all had one of them, haven't we?
Yeah, there's a bit where he keeps pulling back and his hands glow, and then he strikes someone with this sort of super powerful hand. And Roy Thomas quotes it as an influence of, he said he saw that and then he created Iron Fist. That's what
okay.
That came. Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, and I think, and then after that came, I suppose The Big Boss must have been released at some point. I'm not sure if that was released post Enter the Dragon. I'm not
sure. The Big Boss was his first... big success, wasn't it?
Is that
but
the
it was a success in Hong Kong. Sorry, dude?
Is that the one that ends at the sawmill?
The ice.
The last one he did was kind of Wear the Dragon and Enter, because he was working on Wear the Dragon before Enter the Dragon. But
wasn't Game of Death the last one?
Game of Death was his last
one,
wasn't it?
That was uncompleted.
Yeah, then they completed it with Bruce Lee, I think, or Bruce Lee, wasn't it? I can't remember.
It's fucking awful. It's really bad.
Yeah, there's moments in it that are good. You know,
the Bruce stuff is
incredible.
For me, it's great. Yeah, there's
is that the one with Chuck Norris?
No, that's
Big the Boss. Dragon. That's not Big Boss.
Where the Dragon?
Yeah, it's Where the Dragon. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's the one where Chuck Norris, the only film he lost in, isn't it? He rings.
Well, if you're gonna lose to someone,
geez. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Can't think of anyone else. Any other film which Chuck Norris has lost in?
Yeah. But I mean, Enter the Dragon to me is got to be the best one.
Hold on, Slaughter in San Francisco. He's the baddie in that.
Oh, is he? Okay. Yeah.
What the hell's that?
Action Dan revival there.
Oh! Let's not bring that back. That went on for far too long.
Yeah. Strained my abilities to the limit as well.
Well, I went through some comics that were martial arts comics, and I thought I'd go through them. So see if everyone likes them or heard of them, etc. Usagi Yojimbo, obviously.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
You guys like that? You must like that. I can see a bit of that in your work, Chris.
Yeah, I came to that character through the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
The cartoon in the 80s.
Mm. Okay, right.
But there's some beautiful, beautiful artwork in those books.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think they're doing another crossover soon, aren't they? I think it's been announced.
Are they?
Yeah.
That would be incredible. He's such a brilliantly designed character. It's so simple but so effective.
Yeah.
Stan Sakai's artwork as well, it's very open and airy.
Yeah.
It's really nice. There's one book, I can't remember, I've only got the collections, I don't get the single issues, but basically all the characters from he's met previously, they all have to join forces to kind of raid this kind of gunpowder fortress with loads of gunpowder in it, and not all of them make it out, and it's such a good story.
Yeah,
it's all like long-term friends and enemies, they all kind of join up, and it's kind of like the last showdown, like in the Magnificent Seven, when
it's
really good.
Very sort of this... Akira Kurosawa. You can see that sort of stream of films influences it. You know, that sort of little morality tale.
Yeah,
you know.
there's so much you can do with that character as well. He's so open to just be, to have an artist's interpretation stamped all over it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Have you drawn him yet, Chris?
I have drawn him in multiple times, yeah.
Yeah, nice one.
Every time I try and do him differently.
Yeah. There was a mini-series last year, wasn't there, where, I can't remember the name of it now, they broke... I think that's up to about 160-odd, isn't it, in the normal run, but he took a five-issue miniseries, and it was War of the Worlds versus Usagi Yojimbo. Did you read that, anyone?
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. That's a hell of a crossover.
Yeah, incredible. And there's like a big robot samurai mecha that he gets in made of sort of wood and, you know, samurai swords and stuff, and he fights them in it. It's incredible. Just like beautiful stuff. Yeah.
I see another great one. Lone Wolf and Cub.
Oh, I've got that in front of me. Yeah,
absolutely fantastic, and obviously the films and Shogun Assassin, they're just absolutely great as well.
I really liked a few years ago when Dark Horse did a sort of Lone Wolf 2100.
Okay,
I never read that.
It was a similar sort of story, but it was more, you know, massive sci-fi sort of epic. You know, it was all synthetic.
Isn't that called Ronin?
But the artist of that, I can't remember his name now.
It wasn't Gazeki Kojima, was it? The guy?
No,
who
did it's Frank. No, it was. I think it was a Spanish artist who then went on do sort of concept art for Guillermo del Toro films.
Okay, must look that up. Yeah, I love the original series.
Yeah,
yeah.
The 2100 is really cool. I mean, it's very different to the the original.
Yeah,
so it's worth checking out. I loved it when I
bought the initial run as well when they did it in prestige format. Do you remember the sort of Dark Knight Returns format? And they put them out and they were translations, but they had, I think initially they had Frank Miller covers, didn't they?
Yeah.
Obviously he was a big influence in, but they're just beautiful stuff. And then I've got sort of 10, I suppose, of the little mini, they put them out in little paperback size, didn't they, for a while.
I mean, it's so much with... Usagi Yojimbo, like Stan Sakai's kind of stuff, is very Western storytelling. But when you read and watch Lone Wolf, the storytelling is very much of the East. And sometimes stuff will happen that you think you didn't see that coming, you couldn't, because your cultural sort of, the lens you're seeing it through, you would expect it to go a different way, and it doesn't. And that's one of the great things. I love seeing those films and reading books like that, because obviously growing up in the West and reading Western books, films, you see things a certain way. You think, oh, that's going to happen now. And when it doesn't, it's great, because the kind of the rug's pulled under you. You kind of taken somewhere you didn't expect it to go with the story.
Yeah, the tradition of the sort of hero doing certain things that exists in English and American fiction doesn't always hold up in the same way in... Chinese and Japanese fiction, does it? Funny enough, I was thinking exactly the same thing today. I watched Exit the Dragon, Enter the Tiger, which is a sort of unofficial sequel to Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee in it. Hmm. And in that, he has a fight at the end with this guy with a sort of walking stick. And actually, what it went on for ages, to be fair, but these, you know, absolutely ages. But in it, I thought, he might lose this because it's not traditional, you know, fare, really. It's not what I'm used to watching.
So many end in a bleak way, don't they? Through isolation or loneliness.
I mean, it's that genre of heroic bloodshed like John Woo style, with the hero sacrificing himself at the end.
Yeah.
Because I guess if you look at it, there's not much sacrifice. If you kind of, everyone's happy at the end of it, you get, the hero gets the girl or whatever, and it's all fine. But when he kind of like sells himself out to kind of do it, it's kind of a bit more of an emotional punch.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Shall I go through a few more names?
Yeah sure.
Shadow Masters. Anyone remember that?
No.
Spin-off from prestige format. Spin-off from The Punisher. About assassins.
Okay. You know? No, I've not heard of that one.
Paul the Samurai.
Yeah.
Which is part of the Tick universe, as I understand it.
I love the Tick. I've never heard of Paul the Samurai though.
Yeah, similar sort of format. Yeah, similar sort of nutty stuff. Is it Ben England? Isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
There are rumours. And I can't say who, because I had it from an insider, that there is a character coming up possibly in the Tick TV series who might surprise us all.
Okay.
Or the samurai, but so watch this space. Be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'd like that. We've talked about the Tick TV series before, haven't we? But I think Paul the Samurai, would be
they
good.
They did a redesign on the costume, and it looks so much better.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, when I saw that picture, I thought, thank God, because the other one looked like it was made out of paper mache and shit.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. What, for
the,
look.
What, for not the... For this new series, you mean?
The new series. The pilot for the Amazon Prime has a different costume, doesn't it? And they've when they got the full commission, they redesigned it. And he's got a chin piece as well, which I think is quite important to that character, I think.
Yeah.
Like a chin strap. On your
huge chin.
Yeah.
Okay, next. Bulletproof Monk.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Which was, I never read as a comic, and I sort of just about got my way through the whole movie.
That fucking film. I thought, is Chow Yun-Fat in a kung fu film? It's Western, fine, okay, I'll give it a shot. Paid full whack, which is like 15 quid in the day, and got 10 minutes in as I've been fucked.
Did you watch it all?
I watched it all, yeah.
Good old Stifler.
Yeah.
Then we've got Karate Kid in the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, I know of that character. Couldn't tell you anything about
it. I know there's so many Legion characters anyway, but I know nothing of those characters.
Yeah, he had his own series for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, it was all right.
And he had three movies. Oh, no, different Karate Kid.
Yeah. Four. Who was the woman in the Karate Kid, the last one? She went on to win loads of Oscars.
Hilary Swank.
Hilary Swank. Yeah.
Is she in the next Karate Kid?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she became rhyming slang, which is quite nice for her.
Yeah.
God.
Well before the brutal remake with Jaden Smith, was it?
I've not seen that one. Is that good?
It's very different.
Right. You said that, Chris. Just you being nice.
Yeah, it's same premise. And I actually quite enjoyed it until he does, spoiler alert, he does this massive, great big kind of windmill kick thing at the end that defies gravity and...
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's just that's a bit shit. Sweep the leg, man. Sweep the leg.
It's weird. We had the Karate Kid was on today and was watching a bit of it. And you know, you get the two senseis, you got Miyagi and the John Kreese, who's kind of like the crazy.
Can I just stop you there and just say one sensei?
One
one hot shit.
He's got to be the characters who he's based on in Napoleon Dynamite. That's got to be who he's based on.
Rex Quando.
Yeah.
I've done like a little bit of training over the years, and every single one I've met has been like that. Mad. Just like hanging on to their sanity with the tips of their fingernails.
I was in a war. That kind of guy.
Yeah. That's okay.
You'll like this one, Dan. Crying Freeman.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's almost like an Asian James Bond, that character. Kind of going around sleeping with women, killing dudes.
A lot of full frontal nudity.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shame. It's not in James Bond so much.
A lot of back tattoos.
A lot was made out of the tattoos, weren't they? Mm. Did you ever see the Mark Dacascos film?
Yes, I quite like that. You know? I don't mind that.
Have you ever seen... the clip of Mark Dacascos on Iron Chef in America.
No.
have you heard of Iron Chef?
Did Shatner have something to do with that?
He may have done.
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, you get a bunch of professional full-on chefs and, you know, they're in a studio, not fighting with each other, but they're having a cook-off. But then they have a secret ingredient. And when it comes out, Mark Dacascos is presenting it. But every time he introduces a secret ingredient, it's like a kung fu move. Like he goes, salmon. there's a YouTube clip of it where it's about 3 minutes long, where they've cut all of them together. I highly recommend it because it just gets crazier as it goes along.
In a similar vein, I fully recommend the History Channel's Forged in Fire. They have to create. They get metal forgers from across America, and they have to make a different classic weapon. And have it judged by a panel of experts.
Nice. But
it is hilarious. I am going to test your weapon now. And it's full of innuendo. And it's like, and then at the end of each round, he's just like, this martial arts master turns around to him and just goes, yes, your weapon will kill. Brilliant. Whack it on series, Link. You won't regret it.
Nice. I will watch him one of them.
Right, what else we got here? Badger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just wanted to talk about Badger.
I do, yeah. Yeah. I heard someone described as a Badger the other day, and not in a nice way, but there you go.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a martial arts series. Anyone who reads it, you know, he's always got like nunchucks and, you know, he's using his chi and all this sort of thing. And yeah, it's good. It's a good series. Very good. Black Dynamite.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah
I know that's a little good, about that.
That's quite a good comic.
Well, I mean that stemmed from the film came first, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I think then the cartoon, then the comic, I'm going to say.
Yeah. Michael Jai White, who's like a top-notch martial arts.
Yeah, he's a great Spawn. Martial artist. He's made some great,
great martial artists.
He was Spawn, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then he somehow managed to save his career with straight-to-DVD films.
Yes, actually a good one he did called Blood and Bone.
Yes. Oh, that's a cracking film.
Blood and Bone, yeah.
Is that the one weird in prison?
Yeah.
Well, he starts in prison, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just like a double hard bastard. Yeah.
There's a great sort of fight at the end of that, isn't there? There's sort of in front of all the bosses, he fights a couple of people. Really good.
Yeah, that's
Dark Knight as well, wasn't he?
He was, yes, yeah. He was.
Yeah. Ah, okay. Yeah, the comic for that, I think, came out from, I'm going to say IDW, but it might be Boom. I can't remember now. And it was pretty good. Yeah,
IDW rings a bell.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but.
What else we got? Sons of the Tiger and White Tiger. Sons of the Tiger, Abe Brown, Lin Sun, and Bob Diamond, and then all the jewellery, the jingly jangly they wore, got given to White Tiger, and then I think it got given to his niece, the new character, the new White Tiger.
I don't know.
She's in, isn't she in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon thing?
She is, yeah. I've seen her in that.
Ponytail, isn't she?
Yeah.
Long flowing ponytail.
Yeah, and that was, I think Herb Trimpey and especially George Perez drew that in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, Black and White magazine. Pretty good. Yeah, really worth looking out. And then should we talk some Iron Fist, should we?
Yeah, well, it's where we're kind of on Western.
While we're on about chi and all of that jazz. Yeah, we'll talk a little. We're not going to do that many spoilers. I still haven't finished it yet.
Right.
But I will, so I'll start off the conversation with this. So far, I like it. I have no problem with it. I'm seeing a lot of people who, it seems to be an either a yes or a no. There doesn't seem to be a middle ground.
Yeah, there doesn't, really. Does there?
People either like it, I'm not saying they really like it, but people either like it or they just hate it. So,
right.
I would find it hard to loathe it.
Yeah.
I can understand that don't really like it that much, but to loathe it, I don't understand that. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got some great bits to it. I mean, I think the daughter of the dragon character, I've forgotten her name now. She's one of the best bits of it for me.
Oh God, what's her name?
I've forgotten her
name. What, Colleen Wing?
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
she's very good. I really liked her, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her story's really good as it progresses through the series.
Yeah.
I thought maybe she was a little bit young looking, but then again, so is it Finn Jones is his name, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is he, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I liked it. I thought everyone in it was good. I liked everyone in it. My one tiny little problem is I didn't think he was as convincing as he should have been in certain fight scenes.
No, yeah. I'd say some of the choreography was a bit lacking
in
certain aspects.
I will say that for a show that, the one show that out of the four, you fully expect, oh my God, this is going to be non-stop martial arts. This is just going to be a rumble all the time. This is going to be awesome. It doesn't seem to have confidence in its martial arts choreography.
No. There's one episode, I'm not sure if you've got to it yet, Vince. There's one, I'm going to say two episodes where they go full on old school 1970s Kung Fu.
Yeah.
And I thought this looks, one's very similar to Game of Death, actually, without spoiling it for anyone. And I thought this is good. And then there's a little intro of just one little tiny spoiler. There's a drunken master incident.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I thought that was good. Yeah. And then it just sort of pulled back again, you know.
Yeah.
I think generally I was kind of, the way they handled the Danny Rand character, if I was going to write that script, it wouldn't be written that way.
Right.
Because someone coming out of a monastery for 15 years and every day all you're doing is fighting and learning to become a living weapon. And when he comes out, he seems really kind of unfocused and unguided. I mean, when it comes to like him, the one thing he is sure of is about how to kick ass, and all the other stuff he's a bit lost.
Yeah,
I've never heard the name Danny Rand said so many times in my life, though. They seem obsessed with saying his name
all the time.
It's all the time.
See, now you've said that, I'll notice that all the time now.
Yeah. And also, like when no one ever calls him Daniel. Do you know what I mean? I know.
Or Dan.
Yeah, there's none of that, like, you know. But obviously he moves into this, there's no spoiler to sort of say that he moves into the business area.
Yeah, it's in the advert, isn't it?
Yeah. But even then, when he's being introduced, I would have thought they would have called him Daniel. It's a tight, it's a stupid thing to be picky about, I know.
Yeah. But it's like I was watching Legends of Tomorrow, whatever it is. Legends of Tomorrow.
Still doing
is it?
That,
are you? Yeah, still doing that. And they go back to the filming of Star Wars, and George Lucas is there, and they call him George Lucas for the whole movie.
Oh,
they don't go, "Come on, George." They go, "Come on, George Lucas." Like this all the time.
Just in case you forget at any point, yeah. That's George Lucas.
If you tune in like for just like second half of it.
It's George Lucas.
I know that's George, but is it George Lucas? I mean, it's surrounded by Star Wars paraphernalia, but is it
George Lucas? George Lucas. Yeah, is that this? Yeah.
But any criticisms of Iron Fist are kind of, out of all the ones that they've done on Netflix, it's as good as Luke Cage, easily. I'd say slightly better, because it goes somewhere. Luke Cage seems to get lost a lot.
Yeah.
Seems to kind of just float. And...
Yeah. I got to the point with Luke Cage where I started to get excited that I thought it was going somewhere, and then it just drops the ball for me.
Yeah.
Like, it builds up characters that you think, this is going to be really good, and then it either takes them out or they take a back step, you know. Without,
I mean, there's a character, Cottonmouth, I thought he was absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, really good actor as well, wasn't he? Really good. Yeah.
And then he's not in it so much.
Yeah. No spoilers, but he's not in it so much. And you're like, oh, fuck's sake, he's great.
Yeah.
He's like...
And the other big elephant in the room is the allegations of, is it whitewashing? Is that the phrase we use now? Is it?
Yeah, I think it's technically not whitewashing, though.
Well, Kunlun is an imaginary place that floats about in space. I don't know what ethnicity people from Kunlun are, to be fair.
It seems like they take in anyone who's a traveller or comes across the city in that time period.
And the people who are having a go at it, perhaps they should have a go at a movie like Lost Horizon. And if they don't know what that is, they need to educate themselves, because that's a big influence on the 1974 written comic. Mm. And also maybe Tarzan or something like that, because it's about a stranger being taken in, you know, and you know, in another environment and fighting to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what it's about.
Here's another idea. Why don't people either read the book or watch the film or watch the series? And then
Have
an informed opinion about it.
Yeah.
Well, we've said this stuff before. There's real big issues and real big battles to be fought in the world. And this is, arguing over this and spending time on this is honestly pathetic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Honestly pathetic. Just don't. And they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they'd have changed it and said, oh, okay, we've got this one superhero, it's all about martial arts, he's going to be an Asian guy. And everyone's like, oh, fuck's sake. You have an Asian superhero, the only thing he can do is martial arts.
It's
kind of, what would he do?
I know.
People love to be offended, though, don't they? It gives them a voice.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah, it makes people look at them, doesn't it? Yeah.
I honestly think the tide's turning on it, that just kind of outrage culture and stuff. People are just getting absolutely fucking sick of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I do.
I think it's almost creating a backlash on social media. You know, it's the backlash to the backlash.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly people like myself are just so fed up of it, like hearing all the nonsense, that we'll just step away from social media and, I don't know, live our lives.
Yeah, and actually do some stuff that actually helps rather than just like whining like a child online. Yeah. Getting back to the comics then, okay, what's your favourite Iron Fist comics that you've read? What would you, that you've really enjoyed? What would you say?
What, Iron Fist comics?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to drop a bomb.
Right.
I don't. Oh no, tell a lie. I read the. Is it Brubaker?
The Immortal Iron Fist.
The Immortal Iron Fist. I read that.
Yeah, that's brilliant stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
David R. Jarre did some, didn't he? And it was the main. Yeah, incredible stuff. Yeah.
I don't think I've read much of the older Iron Fist stuff.
Right.
I've heard the car. Is it Carr Andrews?
Yeah, that's crazy. You'd love that, mate. That's
It's amazing.
Yeah, and he's a really nice guy. I met him at the NYCC. What a top guy. Yeah, he's a big lover. I think he's a mixed martial arts fighter himself as well.
He does a bit of everything, doesn't he? He's like
film director. Yeah.
Oh, tell a lie. I read the first issue of that, actually, and I thought it was really good. Actually.
Real sort of manga, but also Frank Miller Dark Knight influence in that.
Quite gritty, it seemed. Yeah,
very much so. Yeah. I really like the Claremont Byrne period they did when it became the regular, short-lived regular series. And then it sort of span off into I think it was Marvel Team Up. They sort of concluded some of the story, and then from there he went in to become Power Man Iron Fist, which is a great, great fucking series. Absolutely brilliant series.
Was it? Did it start off Power Man Iron Fist and then become Heroes for Hire?
No, it was always Power Man Iron Fist, and then Heroes for Hire was another series.
Right.
In fact, he died at the end. Danny Rand dies at the end of Power Man Iron Fist. And then they sort of say, oh, no, it was a doppelganger or something. I think they go back.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. But Byrne did some absolutely beautiful work on it. Yeah, him and Claremont, really gorgeous stuff. Really, that martial arts movement stuff, you know.
I was hoping Shang-Chi was going to turn up on the Iron Fist TV series.
Oh, God, he didn't, did he?
It could have been such an easy in for that character to be written into that.
I know.
Look, I honestly think that it will happen. You know.
We can't talk too much about the series, but there was one character in that. I thought that could have been Shang-Chi.
Yeah, there's a bit in the advert where he's got his back to back with this guy, and they're fighting a crowd of sort of people attacking them. And just I saw the top of his head, and I thought, right, that's Shang-Chi in my mind, right? That's Shang-Chi. And then
did
it wasn't.
Did you feel, Tony?
Felt a bit sad.
But when you saw that clip, did you get half-masked?
I'm never half-masked. I'm either full or no-masked. In the whatever it was, fucking 15 hours that I stayed up non-stop to watch the series, that was the reason.
Then he didn't get it. But it's like some of the old Master of Kung Fu stuff, they captured that Bruce Lee element of when he takes an opponent out or kills someone. There's almost like revelry in it that he shouldn't have as a character.
He would take his shirt off in every fight, and as per Bruce Lee. I've just turned to a page in the first Master of Kung Fu on me, was page 275, and he's taking his shirt off to fight some people. It was meant to be that. But later he became, well, he was always a bit of a sort of forced into fighting, you know, and then he sort of discovered his feet sort of thing, you know. And there's one issue, I think it's, I'm going to say issue 69, I can't remember the exact issue, where it's basically, he doesn't fight. It was quite a big moment for the series, because he sort of, on the cover is him sitting in front of a big jigsaw puzzle, and he makes his jigsaw puzzle up as the issue goes on, Mike Zeck drawn. And that was about him sort of wondering, well, you know, why, what he was doing and why he was doing it, you know.
Yeah.
And issue 125 has him walking away. It's quite a brave way to do it, because sales were down. Sales weren't worth shit on him at the time, and he'd gone bi-monthly towards the end, and he walks away from his life, you know, to become a fisherman. Yeah, it's a very, very clever series. Yeah.
Did he always like fishing?
I think he likes a bit of fishing.
You gifted me a graphic novel of Master of Kung Fu.
Did I?
Battle World.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really surprised, because I think, like, when you think about, like, martial arts comics, Kung Fu comics... with Iron Fist aside, you always assume that they're not going to fit into the whole universe as it was, that it's something separate, that it exists on another plane. And I was really surprised to see, like, Callisto and the Morlocks in there.
Right, okay.
They kind of made an appearance in there. I know Battleworld was a bit of a strange format anyway, like loads of different worlds combined together.
They did it, though. You know, I remember hearing on the quiet that he was going to be in it and being hugely excited. But he occasionally, you know, one of the first issues has got Man-Thing in it, for example. Mm. And then he has a couple of appearances, Marvel 2-in-1, Marvel Team Up. You know, and now he's in the Avengers, I think. You know, he's one of the characters in the Avengers, yeah.
Yeah, because Hickman brought him back, didn't he, for...
Yeah, he gave him this weird power where he could grow in size or something. It was all a bit ridiculous, but yeah.
Yes, but yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of moving away from the character roots there.
Kick though, that could take a plane out of the sky. That's the coolest thing ever.
So when we were talking about, we did the Bruce Lee connection there. Should we move on to favorite kung fu martial arts films?
Okay. Yeah, you go first, Dan. Go on.
One that I only saw recently, actually, is Jumped Up. I was always a big fan of the Jackie Chan films.
Yeah,
massive fan of Project A, Police Story 1 and 2.
Yeah, Police Stories.
Yeah, just absolutely. When you watching Police Story, and then there's an interview with Jackie Chan, and basically the idea behind Police Story 1 was glass. We're going to do with glass. So all the fighting, there's people getting thrown through glass, kicked into glass.
Fly through the window of a lorry or something at one point in it as well.
The bus breaks and they all come out. And apparently that was an unscripted stunt.
Oh, was it? Okay.
It's hard to tell. one of the things that was funny was when Jackie Chan got the after credit sequence from working, it's either one way around the other, from Burt Reynolds and the Cannibal Run films.
Okay.
And saw the after credit sequence where they did the bloopers.
Yeah.
And then he started adding it into his films, or the other way around.
Okay.
That's a nice little thing. But the one that I saw recently, and it's a big kung fu film that a lot of people talk about, and that's the 36 Chambers of Shaolin.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is just so good. It's that Gordon Liu.
He was Padme, wasn't he?
He was in, what do you call Kill it? Bill. Kill Bill. Yeah.
Padme, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. Yes, that's right.
He was also the leader of the Crazy Eights. I think he had two roles in that movie.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah,
that was both things, wasn't it? Yeah.
And it's based slightly in historical. Like reading, essentially.
That's an incredible film.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He goes through the training and essentially becomes out as a Shaolin monk, as like almost like a superhero, superhuman.
Yeah.
And they set up the 36th chamber of the Shaolin because there's only 35, and his instruction was to teach like a kind of cut down course for the people to learn kung fu and then rebel against the people, the ruling class of the day.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And they do
did a return to the 36th chamber as well, didn't
he? Yeah.
There's a sequel to it, which is good as well. He's very unwell, isn't he? I understand. Didn't he have quite a bad stroke recently?
Oh no, I didn't hear that.
I saw an article about him online recently saying he's I think it was his 65th or 70th birthday very recently.
Oh shit.
And, but incredible talent. And he's not got that sort of dynamic physicality of Lee, is he? He looks quite a young lad.
Yeah.
If you see him, he looks like a young man, doesn't he?
You look at him, he's like the fury in his face, just like.
Yeah.
And he's done his time in the films. There's so many, like, they used to be like film factories.
Yeah.
Just punching out one after the other with the Shaw Brothers.
Oh, there's hundreds of Shaw Brothers.
Yeah.
I didn't realise until I looked the other day quite how many there are. Yeah.
And they it's hard to list them.
They did saucy ones. They did monster ones. They did all sorts as well, didn't they?
Saucy ones.
Yeah.
So everything this one, like erotic kung fu and shit like that.
Yeah.
They do some really weird ones.
Oh my word.
But it's hard
they
to kind of
Superman movies as well, didn't they? Where they had three characters who wore capes and were called the Supermen or something.
Jesus.
Yeah. Bruce, I think it's something called Bruce Lee Meets the Supermen, and it's Bruce Nye playing it, I think. Or Bruce Leia, which
did the clones of Bruce.
Yeah.
And like three actors, Dragon Lee, Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee, or Bruce Lowe.
It's L.E., I think. Yeah.
Yeah, they're clones of Bruce Lee.
Yeah, I think it's called that. I think there is a movie called that. Yeah,
it's clones of Bruce Lee.
And then there's Bronson Lee as well. I think he might have been Malaysian or something like that, because there was a little film industry going there as well, wasn't there? Martial arts film industry. Yeah. Oh, some cracking stuff. It's all. Watch it, it's shit, and then in the middle of it there'll be the most amazing fucking fight scene that Hollywood would be jealous of. Okay.
Yeah, that's my one.
What about you, Vince?
Well, going against Todd, there's a couple of slightly more recent ones that I've always been a big fan of. It's hard to narrow down, like, to say a favourite.
Yeah.
But certainly I think Ong Bak. Have you seen
that? Okay. Yeah.
Fucking awesome. Yeah.
Tony Jaa in On Back. The amount of times I rewatched that film, it was one of those little gems that before it sort of became, you know, it was a huge hit, didn't it? It sort of became a bit of a cult film. I managed to see it before that happened. And there was just lots of, it's a rare martial arts film where you look at it, and even though they replay the same action sequence like a few times, I still can't get my head around how he does some of those things.
Is that where he does the elbow strike to the head?
That's it,
isn't it?
And
he's like a Muay Thai fighter, isn't he? So it's all knees and elbow strikes.
And he's properly mashing people up. But he does things like doing the split. He's running, does the splits, and slides underneath a car.
Mm.
Right.
And like people are carrying like two panes of glass while he's running away from someone.
Obviously,
And he does a flip between the two panes of glass. It's hard to.
It's fun where they're carrying like a wheel of barbed wire. And I was like, oh, come on, this is getting silly.
Yeah.
Who's running these glass companies?
Yeah.
I know. But Ong Bak, if you haven't seen it out there and you like your martial arts,
I think there's four of them now, aren't there? I've got a feeling there's either three and the fourth is in the works. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he went off grid for a bit, didn't he?
Did he go and be a monk or something? Yeah. I've got a feeling he did do that, didn't he?
I think he became like a breakout star, but he wasn't really ready for it, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's one he done called Warrior King, which is so fucking ace.
Right. Okay. I would say that is quite dull through a lot of it, But yeah, when he does the fighting bits, he does that is, it has a Steadicam shot that follows him walking up a building. Like there's like a staircase, isn't there, Dan, that goes around, goes all the way up to the top of this building, and it follows him just basically beating people up as he's going all the way up. It must be like a 10-minute shot of him just fighting constantly.
Continuous.
Yeah.
Okay. I think they nick his elephant at the beginning.
And it's all about elephant. Yeah.
It's mad.
Yeah. I mean, because in Ong Bak, he's like a monk type person, isn't he? I think.
Yeah.
It's all very spiritual, but yeah. I could say a lot more, but I think I'll pick out that one. Oh, and a big shout out to No Retreat, No Surrender, the 80s film where Jean-Claude Van Damme played the villain, and the kid is actually trained by the ghost of Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, is it? Okay.
I wonder what the Bruce Lee estate said about that, because I would have thought that would have wound someone up.
I know. Yeah. It's so, you don't think, when I was a kid and I watched it was the greatest thing ever. But now that I'm an adult and I'm aware of these things, now I'm thinking, ooh, how'd they get away with that?
What's the one with Christopher Penn in and Eric Roberts?
Best of the best.
Best of the best. I loved that as a kid. That's similar sort of time, isn't it? Mm. Yeah.
Chris, what martial arts films do you like?
As you know, gentlemen, I'm a culture vulture. and always on the lookout for the next art flick. So I'm going to go with... It would have been Enter the Dragon, but I'm going to go with Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, mate. Fucking hell.
You're just playing to the crowd, aren't you?
No, it's probably one of my favourite films of all time.
And me. Yeah, it's good to
absolutely count. Adore it. Wang was my childhood hero.
Yeah.
He was like, he can do things no one else can do. He can see things no one else can see.
If someone says David Lopan, they're my best friend forever.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable film. I can watch it every day and not get
sick
of it. Yeah, absolutely adore it.
Have you read any of the comics, Chris? Or
no, I really wanted to. Jeffrey Cruz was doing some of the covers for them.
Okay.
And they were gorgeous looking covers, but I never did. There's part of me that kind of, because they've always talked about like sequels and everything like that, and there's part of me thinking like it just needs to stay untouched.
Yeah, I can understand
It was a bit of a bastard child anyway, wasn't it?
Nobody made no money, did it?
Nobody knew where to put it, how to advertise it, what it was.
I'll tell you what, I gave the first issue a try, and John Carpenter helped with it. So I'm no doubt, I think they obviously ran a lot of the dialogue back through him. Yeah. And you realise, there's an absolute love for the original material, and it just carries it through, and it's just brilliant. And we're always a bit cynical of crossovers on this show, but the Escape from New York Big Trouble in Little China comic was a fucking absolute delight.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. Nice. To the point where he keeps trying to make out with one of the Snake Plissken characters, because it's all from it to alternate realities. One of the Snake Plissken characters is a woman. He keeps trying to make out with her, and everyone says, well, that's a bit weird.
I think I remember reading at the time that John Carpenter found out that another studio was doing like a kind of Eastern crossover film and was a bit kind of concerned. That was The Golden Child.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear. I shouldn't be concerned. He forged a masterpiece. It's just... And the thing is, I think even as a kid when I was watching it, and that kind of like Street Fighter Blanka kind of monster thing appears.
Yeah.
And I think even as a kid, I was like, that's a bit shit, but it's amazing.
And when the Three Storms pop up as well.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Fucking hell.
It's poetry.
And also, they influenced Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
And they came from Shogun Assassin. The Lords.
Oh, of course they did. The Lords of Death. Yeah. I often say this is going to take Crackerjack. Sorry, my gun.
I still want a pair of those glasses that guy wears in the airport. You know, the Lords of Death guy.
Me too. Did you see the meme or whatever, the gif that was going around, which was Trump saying, apparently, the Lords of Death have kidnapped the girl with green eyes at the airport. But, it's just brilliant. Even the bit where he was running around with lipstick on his face.
Yeah.
It's kind of... So the dialogue in it's brilliant. The way it pokes fun at itself is absolutely amazing. And it's what's really nice about it is both cultures just completely seem to be admiring each other and ripping it out of each other at the same time.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I think you'd like the comic, mate. Give it a go. Yeah, if you can find it cheaper, have a look at it. Yeah,
and they've just released recently an art book, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, is it art book that's to do with the comic or things like that?
I think it was stuff in the film.
Is it?
Look, there's an official book of artwork from the film. There's an unofficial book.
Yeah.
And each one contains a bit that the other one doesn't, which is a bit frustrating.
And I've noticed that, I'm not sure where I saw it, but the art book has that sort of comic book looking Kurt Russell on the cover, I think. But there's a board game of Big Trouble in Little China coming.
Yeah.
And they've used the same cover, but I think they've changed his face, so it actually looks like Kurt Russell more.
Right. I'd like to see Big Trouble in Little China Hero Quest Edition.
That'd be awesome.
Because we need all this just before The Rock drops his trousers and takes a big old shit on our childhood.
Don't.
I don't know why he's doing that. I really don't.
Yeah.
Studio, isn't it? We said it last week. There's a million and one films and books out there that could have been redone better.
Yeah.
But you're going to fucking do like the classics.
Yeah.
I said the other day, a rollable TV series.
Is there an idea?
If they did that properly, I reckon that'd do really well.
What if there was like a proper, I don't know, like FX or HBO adult series of Rollerball? Yeah, I think so, because I always thought that, you know, I'm not a massive fan of Rollerball, but I like the idea of it.
I love the original.
Yeah, the original thing. Think about it like a corporate culture society where everything's being dumbed down, and there's this game to try and keep them in line, and the one star player is kind of realize that he's kind of time's up, and I can only imagine go for one series because he can't really live at the end. Or
yeah, who would you get to play Moon Pie? I don't know. Who would that be?
Don't know. That's a difficult one. They have to be likable, immensely. Yeah.
So a young Ron Perlman would be good.
Yeah. Right, Rollerball. Do you think you could make a convincing comic out of it?
Well, they did with the Harlem Heroes, didn't they? I suppose. Very similar.
Yeah.
Similar, but I'm talking about the Rollerball franchise, Tony. Do you think you could?
I don't know. It's a bit like making a Roy the Rovers comic, isn't it? He's got to score a goal in the last minute every time, and he...
Don't we all?
Trouble is, Rollerball, when it first came out, the violence that they showed on the screen was fucking horrific. God knows, you'd have to...
You'd have to have chainsaws.
Every stage has to be a different organ.
They'd have
to have weapons and all sorts now, wouldn't they? Be more sort of, yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe I think it's impossible, isn't it? Yeah. You know, they did it with Ghost. Was it Ghost Racers, which was the Battle World Ghost Riders series? That was kind of that, wasn't it? It was like Death Race 2000, Rollerball type thing.
Yeah,
similar sort of thing. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Did you mention your martial arts film, Tony?
No, not yet. Okay.
Let's have yours.
Well, like Chris, I don't think Enter the Dragon can be beaten, so I'm going to choose another one, which is probably my second favourite, which is the first AA I ever saw at the cinema. I had to creep in. I was slightly underage, and it was over here. It was called The Big Brawl, and in America, it's called Battle Creek Brawl. You must have seen this, Dan.
Yeah, Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan and Mako plays his sort of. The bloke who teaches in martial arts, and it's set in, I'm going to say, 1920s Chicago. And he gets spotted by the mafia as a good fighter, and he gets taken to Battle Creek, which is a town in the sort of south, it's one of the southern states of America, where all the sort of gangsters, sort of tough guys go, and they fight it out. And it blew my mind as a kid seeing it. You think, this is amazing. Jackie Chan is so cool in it, you know, he's so. You know, it's such a great personality in it, and he has. First time they probably put proper kung fu on an American cinema movie at any great length, you know. And the soundtrack is just—I still whistle the soundtrack now. Just brilliant, you know. Really good.
Yeah.
Well worth watching.
Jackie Chan's just fantastic on screen.
Yeah. Even Mako's got a few moves in it. He does a few good moves and stuff, you know. And the big guy they fight is a guy called Kiss, and he basically is this big sort. He looks like he's probably a big fat American wrestler of the early 80s, late 70s kind of looking guy, you know. And he grabs you and he crushes your ribs and kisses you and sucks the air out of you as he kills you.
Oh my word!
And I remember watching it as a sort of 12-year-old. And having crept in the cinema and thinking, oh my god, this is so violent. I remember there's a granny in it who says fuck. At one point, I mean, that was the thing that stuck with me. I'm like, really? Wow, there's a granny saying fuck in this. That's amazing. I watch an awful lot of movies where grannies say fuck, to be fair.
Yeah.
I remember I read the Jackie Chan autobiography, and I remember him saying like stuff about when he went over to Hollywood, they were always really shit hot on him not doing stuff because right. the insurance wouldn't cover him. Yeah. Whereas when he was making it in back home, he'd do whatever.
Yeah,
which is crazy, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
you, get, you bring a guy over for a reason, and then you just go, actually, there's a ton of red tape in the way that means
you can't do it.
Well, but at least you're a solid actor.
Yeah. Like... yeah. Yeah, it's mental.
Oh,
cool. I think that's the kind of one of the things that really loses in films today when they do on-screen fights. When you have, like, you cut in the CGI character spinning around doing five kicks in the air, you know that that's not real. And there's that uncanny valley of instantly saying, well, that's not real. And as you mentioned earlier, Vince, with the on back, when you see the physicality of the actor actually doing it, it's so much more impressive. It's only like he's jumping 3-4 foot off the ground and doing it.
Yeah.
It's not 20 foot up in the air. But when you can see that camera angle 3 times, they're saying the same thing. And it's just as fascinating the first time to the third time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My problem was when that, what's that movie that won the Oscar that came out? Hidden Dragon, or not?
Crouching
Tiger.
Yeah. When that came out, I thought, really? People think this is now a kung fu movie.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people on strings. Well, they want to watch a proper kung fu movie.
Yeah.
It's a celebration of wire work, that movie was.
Yeah, yeah, it really is, isn't it? Yeah.
I was watching films like that for fucking years and years and years, and when it kind of like everyone was hyping the fuck out of it, I kind of like, this is just bog standard. This has been done for fucking years.
I think the Guardian crowd discovered kung fu movies, didn't they? Yeah. I think that's what happened there, and they decided they were art house. And we had a series of movies that were a bit like that, didn't we? You know, they look very beautiful and they're, you know, incredibly well shot. But I don't want to see someone, you know, running over the tops of trees and stuff.
It was like Hero and all that stuff.
I mean, there are sequences in things like Hero and The House of Flying Daggers is pretty, you know, stunning films. But I know what you mean. There's nothing quite like seeing two people having a fight and it's all one shot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't, there's no quick cuts.
The Bruce Lee has with Mako, not Mako, Bolo in Enter the Dragon still is just incredible, you know? John Saxon has with him. You just watch it, and it's so tense, isn't it? Who's the big guy with the beard he fights in that?
With Smashes the Bottles.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what's his name?
Oh, he's an incredible guy. You know, really interesting guy. But that's a brilliant fight.
Bob Wall.
Yeah. He's got a real history to him, that Bob Wall. And they were actually really good friends, weren't they? They were you know.
Because a bit of a Bruce's story, and he accidentally injured him with one of those bottles.
Oh, did he?
And they had to fucking take him away because half the people on the set wanted to fucking kill him. It's like, it's an accident. He didn't want to kill Bruce Lee. But like, there's all the extras, obviously, thinking they're like right hard nuts. Like, they had to tell Bruce to stop taking these challenges from people.
Yeah.
Fight the extras.
Anyway. The only special effect in Enter the Dragon is the fact that John Saxon's wig doesn't fall off.
I've said it, I would have wished if like John Saxon had been the one died and it was Williams and Lee at the end.
Yeah.
That would have been fucking brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. You look at Shang-Chi, that's the basis of Shang-Chi. You know, you've got MI6 being phoned in the night, waking up and jumping on the helicopters and heading off to the island where the challenge has taken place. You know, it's like, it's so good, so really good, you know.
With that in mind, I mean, the state of modern martial arts comics, should we say, for this point, let's say Western comics.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think the state is at the moment, and where can they take their inspiration, and what sort of things should they do?
I think it needs to be more kinetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything that I see, even like the elements of martial arts that are in your standard fare comics. You know, I remember reading like X-Men bios and stuff, and they're all kung fu trained and everything. You don't ever see that side of things. Like they run into battle and they use their gifts, they use their powers and everything like that. But and they'll throw a few mean punches, but you never see like Cyclops, who's apparently like a master of like every different martial art, going flying in with a flying kick or anything like that.
You'd
think that would come quite naturally to somebody who was.
It was one of those things that they kind of dashed onto every character bio, like after the 70s and 80s. Oh, they're a martial artist and they can do X, Y, and Z.
I mean, you had like Wolverine spent all that time in Japan and stuff.
That miniseries was incredible. That's a brilliant miniseries.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
But for instance, if they reference that now, he's not, his fighting's not really any different. He's still just jumping in and just swinging his
arms.
Yeah,
he's a samurai, isn't he? You know, that's what he is now.
Yeah, I mean, I read the Charles Soule Savage Wolverine. Well, I think it was Charles Soule, wasn't it? Savage Wolverine.
Right.
With Joe Madureira drawing, and they had this one panel that said, and it was Wolverine saying, "To be honest with you, I've never been that good in a fight."
Right.
And it was like that's the whole basis of your character. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that I've never been that good in a fight. It usually takes me 5 or 6 minutes to warm up. And I can see that side of Wolverine, because, you know, surely over the time you get a bit lazy with it. Like, oh, it doesn't matter if I get hurt a bit, because, you know, I can warm up. I can warm
when you've got, like, the telescopic indestructible blades come from your hands.
Yeah.
You don't need to know too much. I mean, that pretty much does.
But that also goes against, you know, that sort of statement goes against that I'm the best that there is at what I do. You know, that was something he said, wasn't it?
And he says, "I'm a scrapper." That's what he says. Yeah. He says, "I'm a scrapper." You know,
and you'd think like it, there would be some editor somewhere kind of going, "Well, that doesn't really marry the character."
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I don't think editors pay quite as much attention to the moment as perhaps they should do.
Quite a poignant moment there.
These people that are like street fighters who've not done a day's martial arts training in their life, but they can hold their own in a scrap.
Yeah.
And a view kind of Wolverine more like that. Obviously, he has had the training in his past. Yeah. But it's interesting.
Look, the reality of it is, we all know and we love watching kung fu movies, but if someone came in and did all that posing, you'd just knee him in the bollocks, wouldn't you?
I mean, what looks good on screen is not practical in reality.
I would say the one character that I can think off the top of my head that you see most, certainly martial arts training, or you see a lot more of that, the work that they put into it, is Batman.
I was looking at a lot of message boards in preparation for today, and everyone's saying, who's the best martial artist? And people were saying, well, it's Batman.
And I think that's because they've shown him practice. I mean, how many times have we watched Batman like have a spar with like a dummy or something like that, or he's doing some sort of martial arts training? You don't see that. I mean, like Chris is saying, the X-Men, you never see any of that.
Yeah.
So you're never going to believe it when they do some kung fu or martial arts. Whereas Batman...
I seem to remember watching like the animated series of Batman where he was against like Ra's al Ghul and people like that. And they were having some kind of long martial arts duel where they were both... And that seems to be something that they've taken away from that character as well.
Yeah.
Where he's become more like an omnipotent kind of figure that, you know, will never die or whatever. It seems to be the bit that seems to be a little bit out of fashion.
Yeah, but if you pay attention to certain Batman histories, he trained under Richard Dragon, didn't he?
Mm.
That was, and who Richard Dragon is basically, for want of a better term, the master of kung fu of the DC universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, this sort of expert martial artist. I think he also taught The Question, I think.
Okay.
Depending on which I read it. There's an Alan Grant written novel about it as well, I think, that I read. And there's a sort of a intertwined history amongst them all. Mm. When he went on these sort of Walk the Earth before he became Batman, he trained under martial arts teachers and stuff, and Richard Dragon is one of them.
Mm. Yeah. I'm not so much a DC reader. Certainly we've talked a lot about Marvel characters when we've talked about martial arts. But who has like DC got?
Well, they've got Richard Dragon, they've got Karate Kid. Karate Kid is an interesting character because that is his Legion superhero superpower, apart from having a flight ring, is he just does karate. Bronze Tiger, Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mentioned Lady Shiva. She pops up often in Batman. I mean, most of the time she will fuck up. They bring her in, she will beat whoever's there apart from Batman. So that's a good character to have. I think she, like, when they do those kind of rankings, she's like in the top 3 or 4 of the best sort of martial art characters in the DC universe.
Yeah.
Completely unpowered, just got martial arts.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't really have any. Do they have any sort of mainstream characters who are just martial arts?
I can't think of any, no.
There's Judo Master and Tiger, they're in Justice Society, but they're very rarely used.
Katana?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Green Arrow's son. The second arrow, Connor. He was a martial arts monk, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
If there's any that, you know, there may be some of you out there listening who are screaming at your, into your MP3 player or whatever it is, feel free to let us know on the group talk.
Yeah, on the chat.
I'll tell you what's one we haven't talked about as well, which relates to the Bruce Lee conversation, is Kato. The Green Hornet. And he's had his own couple of his own series. You know, and essentially he is basically Bruce Lee, isn't he? You know?
Yeah.
Would you Kato's almost more popular than Green Hornet?
Oh, definitely for me.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's definitely down to the individual, but you know, I probably like Kato more than the actual Green Hornet.
Since that steaming turd of a film,
was he a robot or what in that? It was weird. He kept like seeing people through X-ray vision and stuff, and it was shit.
I don't usually take dumps on things, but that was just a joke.
See, when I approach Green Hornet, you got that the Richard Reed, was it Reed character? I can't remember his name is. Yeah. He's not a fighter, but he wants to get to the bottom of this, so he hires some fucking badass dude who's essentially going to be his hard man, and then goes into place, and then he fucks everyone up, and then Green Hornet does what he's got to do.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot more of an interesting approach.
There's that great spin-off as well, where they did the Batman crossover as well, the Adam West Batman, didn't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
And Bruce Lee's in that, and I think you can see there's moments in that where the guy who played Robin was like, fuck me, what have I got myself into here?
Do you know the backstory behind that?
No, I don't know, no.
That when it started all coming about and Bruce Lee was doing his thing, Burt Ward, was it? Was kind of giving it the big and saying that I've got a black belt. And Bruce Lee heard about this, and he fucking weren't happy. So he just started shit talking, saying, "When I get on set, we're gonna find out." And obviously, he was crapping himself out. So yeah,
poor guy.
Yeah,
I like that TV series, The Green Hornet. It's actually worth watching. Still watchable.
Yeah,
it's not camp like the Batman series, or not quite as camp for the times, but yeah, it's good, and he's really good in it. You know, is it Van Williams? I've got a fucking name of the guy who played him. Yeah, the other guy, but he's very good.
You know, there's the Kato Show over because that's what they were watching.
Yeah,
I think it went on to inspire Black. Was it Black Mask by Jet Li? There's a Jet Li film.
Oh yes. I own that. That's very good. Yeah,
a big one for martial arts and like cool martial arts characters was like the old G.I. Joe kind of stuff. The best thing about that for me was like the Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow rivalry that was going on. I mean, like IDW seemed to really, really focus on those two characters because they know how popular they both are and how cool an all-white and all-black ninja just look. And that's amazing stuff.
And it was the flip, wasn't it, that the good guy was wearing black and the bad guy was white.
Yeah,
but they were never kind of completely black and white characters, were they? Like Storm Shadow had an agenda.
There were a couple of kind of team ups that they've performed together and stuff. Yeah, it's
there was two characters sort of back to back. It was Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow were back to back. It was a classic sort of G.I. Joe sort of cover. And they looked like they were about to fight a load of people coming towards them, and there was like fire in the background. I'll have to dig that up because it is one of those iconic sort of covers for me as a kid. Seeing those see those two characters come together, and you know, I mean, I was a massive G.I. Joe fan. You know, I had loads of figures and read the comics that were in. Was it in the back of Transformers?
They put them together, didn't they?
Just little scenes like Storm Shadow. There was a small mini comic where Storm Shadow went in to kill someone, and this guy had like a sort of doorway, but it was loads of bells, hanging bells coming down, so he could hear anyone coming in. And Storm Shadow appeared behind him, you know, without making a single sound. And when you're a kid and you read that, you think that's the coolest thing I've ever read in my life.
He's so cool. Yeah, I was always the knob on the playground, like, you know, when you were playing armies as a kid. I was always the knob who was running across the playground pretending I had a sword, chopping the bullets up as they tried to shoot me. I'm not dead!
You work in a school, and we know you still do that.
I do still do that. Playtime following my rules.
There's a really, I always remember a sequence in that G.I. Joe where Storm Shadow's taken under his wing Cobra Commander's son, Billy, and he's training him in ninjutsu, and they're kind of flipping around the city, and while they're doing this, they're having a chess game, like telling each other where their pieces are moving on the board, and they've got to remember where they are. And that's like a nice little piece. It's always stuck with me. It's really interesting.
One that we've ignored so far is Karnak from the Inhumans.
That's a blank spot for me.
Yeah, is he, that's why I've ignored it.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. He's the Inhuman in his ability. He's like a martial arts master. His hands are like molded into sort of karate chop hands, and he has the ability to spot the weakness in anything, so he can fell a building by karate chopping it.
Oh, okay, that's pretty handy.
Sort of thing. Yeah, pretty cool character.
I mean,
and then
go on, mate. Go on. Go on, you go.
There you go.
I was going to say, kind of the Eastern comics, when I first came on to kind of watching manga and anime, the fighting sequences in that, it, by and large, they pretty much depth charge most Western comics out of the water with the kind of the level of energy.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just absolutely phenomenal. Like Zach last week, he's got that same kind of fluidity and energy and power in his imagery that a lot of Westerners kind of struggle.
A phenomenal one for a martial arts movie, if you're going to go under that umbrella, is Ninja Scroll.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the second way we talked about that. Yeah.
Incredible visual size.
Yeah. I put up a list today of top 10, like, because it's kind of kicking off at the moment, top 10 anime or manga films to kind of get into, and that's one of them.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of stuff's on YouTube as well now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Watch it. Slightly illegally.
That and Street Fighter 2, the Street Fighter 2 movie, which is the epitome of martial art, because it is essentially just people just kicking the crap out of each other for an hour and a half.
For no reason, yeah.
Yeah, but that's got some awesome martial arts scenes, as well it should.
It really has. And dare I say it, the old, I'm going to get shot down for this, this is where my Skype thing just goes dead, and I'm like, guys, some of the fight scenes in the old Mortal Kombat movie. The live action one.
Oh, I can barely remember that.
The film is worse than like a bloated scrotum, but
take your word for it.
Yeah, please do. But the fight scenes in that are amazing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
You just like, I think the masters of kind of the current masters of transferring that are the Udon Entertainment guys. I mean, their business is martial arts in comics, and the fluidity and the angles and they can't.
You got a piece of work in one of their books, didn't you?
Why, I have, Vincent. Yeah.
But to be fair, like, you've got that same energy in your work, Chris. A lot of that comes over, and it does you do it justice.
Well, thanks, Dan.
That's fine.
Anyway, more. Come on, Tony.
Right, okay, for me, I suppose when I really noticed the difference between Western and Eastern comics was that moment in Lone Wolf and Cub. I'm going to fuck the names up. Is it Kazuo Koiki and Gaseki Kojima? There you go.
That's where... lovely, Tony, but I meant you can compliment me now.
Oh, no, I don't want to compliment you. Fuck that, yeah. It's where have you read it, you guys?
Some of it.
He gets employed to assassinate this sort of... this sort of the head of a town or something, sort of politician-y type character. And he does that classic, and I've not seen it at the time, and I've seen it like 1,000 times since, is where he swings his sword at him, and you think nothing's happened, and then slowly he breaks in half and he falls into two pieces.
Oh, that's the best.
I love that. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the best thing. It's the end of... I know I keep going off on a movie tangent, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But the end of that movie, Equilibrium, with Christian Bale.
Yeah, where he just does it. Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be a massive fight. Brilliant.
Yeah, but you see it all the time now, and I've never seen it at the time. It's far too violent a thing.
Yeah,
you would see in sort of Marvel or DC comics, and I read that and I thought, fucking hell, that's incredible.
Yeah, you
know, it's done. It's been done to death now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, massively. Yeah. Everyone's fallen into two pieces.
It's usually that bit now where they do the heel stamp, and then it falls in half.
Yeah.
Bifurcating your cock. What?
Yeah.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Howard the Duck, Master of Quack Fu.
Oh,
I think that's worth it.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Oh. I hate that little bastard duck. I said it. I hate him.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm with you, Chris. I'm not a Howard the Duck fan in any way, shape, or form.
You'd have liked it if you'd have read the original series, but now he's just fucking all over the place doing his brain in.
What, you mean like Deadpool?
Have they got Duckpool yet? Is he got?
Yes, they do.
Oh, God's sake, I was joking.
I read up like that Gwenpool. I thought, what's Gwenpool from?
Yeah.
And then just like, it's just the absolute flimsiest motivation. Right. As like, there's just nothing here. And then suddenly there's a comic book being made about the character.
Oh, so, God, okay.
Yeah.
Just don't get
they're
it.
They're too busy churning out stuff like that to fully edit their books.
I actually genuinely think there's more cosplayers of Gwenpool than there are people who've ever read the comic.
Yeah.
The comic, the one comic.
Yeah. There was about 100 cosplayers before the comic had come out, I think, one year I saw. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that spoils my piss, that
does. I say, I apologise to Sarah. I'm on like a certain group on Facebook and someone says, I'm thinking of going as Deadpool. It's smart. Oh, okay. Come stick original, same fresh.
Speaking of that particular Facebook group and martial arts, isn't our friend back, the bloke who reckons he's a master of 10 different martial arts, and he actually believes himself to be a mutant? He's back, isn't he? Yeah.
The man that
he blocked me on Facebook because I'd pointed out that the art that he was putting up was just he'd recoloured somebody's cloak from a cartoon.
Oh, it was Sword in the Stone, wasn't it?
That's it, yeah. And what he'd do is he'd say, you don't understand fan art, and then he'd block me again. I was like, oh, fuck that. You know,
was that actually your reaction?
Yeah,
when they did the block card before you can, that's straight in.
Yeah.
You want the final word, because that's like...
Yeah, last word. Sometimes I have a conversation with people, and I'll just put last word. That'll be just my old tweet to them.
Oh, God.
Cool.
So martial arts comics now, especially like in the indies and stuff. Do you think actually the independent area is almost the better place to do a martial arts comic now?
I still think manga's the best place to do it.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Yeah.
So in that sense, are you saying
that one hit dead, Vince? Didn't it?
Why
do an impression?
Well, no one else should bother. Just let them.
To be fair, I read a book and it was about some dude, a Western guy, and he went over in the 80s to become a Shaolin monk, and he's like an autobiography of like him in his time there, and that'd make a great comic.
Yeah.
But you need someone with a similar kind of experience. I mean, there was one guy who did, I think we reviewed it on the show, when he did wrestling. He got into wrestling and he made wrestling comics, genuine, like on the mat kind of grappling and shit, and he is kind of autobiographical about that and his life going to events and stuff.
Okay, yeah, I'd do that.
That's cool.
But, yeah, if you did someone who kind of like they do the when you go for a black belt in karate, there's a lot of the styles that you have like 100 man fight or 50.
Yeah,
right.
That'd be interesting to sort of someone to make a comic about the documentation of them getting ready for that and doing that.
Yeah. I remember when I did judo, the guy who taught us, he told this story about a guy who lived up in the mountains, and he came down and defeated everyone with foot sweeps and then went back up in the mountains for another 5 years to discover shoulder throws. And I thought, that's quite cool. I like that.
That's Brian Adams, isn't it?
Yeah. He was busy doing too many sit-ups.
Yeah.
There's the father of like modern-day Kyokushinkai karate called Masomiya, and he's always the one that they... It kills a charging bull in real life, striking on top of the head. And he did that. He went off.
That's not very nice.
Nah. Yeah. But he went off into the mountains to just basically just punch and hit hard things and then came back down. And
we've all done that, though, haven't
we? Yeah. Do you reckon, though, there's a load of master martial artists at the base of a mountain just pissing themselves at all the people who head deep into the mountains to go and find, like, you know, oh, look at them.
Yeah.
You can tell they're tourists. Looking for the martial arts way when we're really at the foot of the mountain or in the middle of this quaint little village.
Or could it be where they sort of they climb up loads of mountains and they're looking for a secret city and it's not there?
Yeah.
Did he say that?
So actually I'm quite surprised that more sort of UK or sort of creators, certainly small press creators, I haven't seen so much martial arts comics.
No, it's not
such a, like, you know, when we talked about the subject, we were like, oh yeah, great, you know, because you think about the films and the books and everything, but you don't really see as much, maybe.
I would echo what Chris said earlier. I don't think it's in favour at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah, I think also two people are too caught up in their own bullshit and just want to do stuff and talking to their girlfriend on the couch these days.
So it should be like bullshit foo, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I'd rather much see a comic about someone who hangs around Soho and has coffees and stuff.
Yeah, there they are in their coffee place talking about their tattoos and their nice beards. Yeah. And in walks someone and just chops the fuck out of them.
Hipster foo.
If only there was a comic series set in Soho in the 1970s.
If only.
Yeah.
It'd be like really violent, sexy.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'll send you the script for that later, Chris. Yeah.
Do we have any last words on the subject of Kung Fu comics?
Favourite Kung Fu artist? Someone who's done art in a comic. Kung Fu cut art. Who are you going to say? I've already said mine. What about you guys?
Oh, shit.
Western, it'd have to be Mike Zeck.
I knew you were going to say Zeck. Good man.
He's fucking ace. The physicality in the drawings. The Eastern one, I don't know. I'll have to come back to that one.
Anyone who can draw a roundhouse kick and a pair of Lionel Blairs is all right by my, you know, and that's Zeck in it. Yeah.
I'm going to go Alvin Lee.
Ooh.
I know I always tend to go more recent, but that's kind of what floats my boat. But he kind of he really gets that fluidity of movement,
right?
And the angles that he chooses are just insane.
Yeah. So and yeah, I'll tell you, having seen some of Lamming's Daredevil pages, I think he's got it. He's got that physicality. I think
nice.
I really can't wait to see that come out. Yeah, Vince.
My choice is actually going to be the artist of the book I'm going to recommend later. So.
Oh, okay. So we'll hold that one back.
Interesting. Through. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll make you right on that as well, mate. That is really good. Yeah, I've got to tell you. Yeah, we know. We both read it recently, and yeah, incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go, Kung Fu comics. Did we miss anything? We probably did. We were too busy talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme
and his sweaty. He didn't come up, unfortunately. Well,
he did once when I mentioned No Retreat, No Surrender, Dan.
Of course. Yeah. I'll take you back. I'm a fool.
He's come up. He's actually come up four times during this show, I think. What do you mean? But, it's difficult when you're on that much chisel, apparently.
Oh. we're obviously when we put the post up about the latest episode on the group talk. Feel free to comment and let us know what you think about martial arts comics. And
if there's any
that we've missed out, because we're all in a bubble. And I can honestly say I'm by no means, I know essentially nothing about this. You know, I've read some good books, but you know, I know there's a lot more out there that I haven't read.
Mm.
So feel free to jump in when the post goes live. Well, it'll probably be live now as I speak, won't it?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. To it, you weirdos.
Yeah, get on it. Sort your life out.
Yeah.
Right, so do we have any shout-outs, gents?
Yeah, I've got one. Go on, you go first, Dan.
Well, I've got three, so shall I do one first?
Okay.
The Awesome Comics podcast jam piece. It's going really well. Getting quite a lot of artwork in for this. So essentially, we're looking to do a bit of promotional artwork for the show. And we're going to have like a whole load of your characters jumping out from behind the logo, in front of the logo. We're going to work out the logistics of it. There's a post on the Awesome Comic Chat forum that's got all the kind of spec for it, but essentially we want your character jumping up in the midair, saved as on a transparent background, and we're going to work them in. So as many as we get, we'll put them on there, and it should look really nice.
Yeah,
pretend it's in great work.
We've had loads of so far, haven't we? But yeah, we need some more, but we've had lots of good ones so far.
Yeah, so keep coming.
I'll send something in. I saw something about that. I'll put something forward for that.
I mean, even repurpose some artwork that you've done of a character jumping up, crop it out of the comic. It's fine.
Yeah.
Ooh. We will probably have, I would imagine, by the time it rolls around, we will probably have prints of this at London Super Comic Con, won't we, gents?
We'll
do some prints of these, and it'll be the perfect thing that when you go to conventions and these small press events and you're talking to creators, you can get them to sign their character.
Exactly.
That's a great idea. I don't. You know what? I don't see enough jam pieces for commissions either.
Yeah, we don't get them much over here, do we? No. The States are more common, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. For those who don't know, what some people out there might think, what's a jam piece? We're not talking about some sort of sexy move involving strawberry jam. Mm. What are we actually talking about?
Sexy movies involving strawberry jam.
Chris, what would you consider to be a jam piece? Not that jam piece, you filthy bastard.
Vincent, the Oxford Dictionary defines the jam piece as a commissioned piece of work that is often split into several sections where the client or customer can go and visit several different stations or different artists that they like and admire and ask them to do a section each of a piece.
There you go.
There you go. Okay.
I know that Vander's big. Bri is into it, isn't he, Chris? He's got some really nice pieces. Yeah,
he's contributed some amazing ones, hasn't he? He's got some great names on the ones he's done.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. They should do it as like the shows that the Leamington Comic Con, for instance, send round a jam piece and then auction it off or sell it off at the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be a nice idea.
I think they did it at True Believers, but I don't know what happened to that. Do you know, Vince? Or
I think it was one of the early ticket holders won it.
Okay. Yeah,
I think, or is it a raffle prize or something? It was something like that. But yeah, it's a good idea.
It's one of the moments where I got to wind Vince up because he was stressing a little bit about it.
Well, because everyone else was so good.
Don't feel bad, mate. I didn't even get asked.
we've just signed as guests, haven't we, for next year? I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good laugh.
Yeah, it's the end of the world is nigh. Jam pieces. If you haven't tried it before, try it. I think a good way of doing it is some people, they rather than like a group picture, they sort of break it down into boxes, don't they?
Yeah. The best one I ever saw was somebody did Spider-Man's web, and then they had a different like villain or Spider-Man reference picture in each of the segments of the web.
Nice.
That's a good idea.
That was a good idea.
So
you should do a commission thing on the Facebook posting commissions. I might set that up this week. If you've had a good commission, you want to put it up, then stick it on. We'll have a little space for see what's what. Yeah, that'd be good.
It'd be nice to put kind of like a rates board if someone was like, right, Joe Bloggs will do a commission for £50 and then have a running total. But it might be quite difficult to manage that.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
did you just argue against your own idea?
Yeah, kind of worked it out.
It was back to the Lois and Clark moment.
Yeah.
Where you recommended Lois and Clark.
Yeah. It's kind of brain fired.
Oh, dear. Any other shout outs?
I've got one. Go on, you do yours, Dan. I'll do
yours and I'll do mine at the end.
The Sliced collection dropped into my email today or yesterday. Fucking great. Ken is an absolute gent and is really pushing the bubble on stuff. As part of the backing stuff, I got an audio commentary, which he is very, very kind enough to mention us in. Very cool of him. It's really good stuff. I wrote the intro to it, which I'm quite proud of, actually, and I really took a lot of care in it, and I've actually got two strips in it. So please get on it. Contact Ken Reynolds for Sliced and get a copy. It's really good.
Nice one.
Mm.
My final shout out, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Paper Cuts and Ink Stains Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You listen to this, it might only have a day or two to go. They're quite near the target, so get on that. The links will be in the show notes. So good luck.
Cool.
There you go. So, Chris, do you have any shout outs?
No. Actually, you know what, I want to shout out for Jay Martin from Close to Immortality, and he writes ALV amongst other things, and I've been for a beer a few times with Jay now whenever we do a show together, and it's always quite funny because you always hear about John, you always hear about Chris, and he's always like, I don't think anyone knows who I am. So
I'm always saying to him, you must get him on.
Check out Jay, because he's a lovely man. He's hilarious. He's had tears streaming down my face many, many times.
He posts the funniest shit on Facebook.
Yeah,
he does.
So yeah,
He's a brilliant bloke. So yeah, that's my shout out.
Nice one.
We love you, Jay.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, Dan just went.
I did nod as well to back that up. You can't see that because it's in audio format.
As you can see, 93 episodes in, and Dan knows exactly what he's doing when it comes to the audio medium.
I know the limitations.
And, speaking of which, we better start planning for the 100th. It's not far off, is it?
Oh, God, I know.
Is that the nude episode?
Yeah.
Yes, it will be, because no one's going to see anything, so we might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be now.
Well, the weather's getting nicer, so it won't be too cold, will it?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd really fucking creep me out, me what? Talking to you to you realising you're nude.
I don't think I can concentrate.
Yeah. No. Just sweating profusely. Stammering your words.
Oh. Oh my word, it's going to be a sexy show, that one.
I thought we were going to do the clip show.
Yeah, I love that.
What you're going to do, Dan,
that makes me laugh so much. Oi.
No, actually,
remember when we said no, this?
Episode 100 is the one that Dan Butcher is editing.
Live one.
Yeah.
You can both do it. Yeah. Oh dear. Anyway, so there you go. Also, quick shout out. I just want to thank everyone who entered the competition.
Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, we've got some correct answers. Go put them in the hat and sort them out. We won't announce it yet, but you're going to win some goodies from Zach Simmons Hearn.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a top gent.
So yeah, it's a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do we have recommendations for the people?
We do.
Yeah. Who's going to go first then?
I don't mind.
Okay, you go down then. Yeah, good idea.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah. Play on the show.
Lovely.
My one's an oldie, but a goodie. It's Fist of the North Star. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Hokuto no Ken. It's massive. It's such a big thing. It's kind of... I initially came across it when... Remember when they first started doing manga videos in the UK? The first one they released was Akira, and they followed it up. It was either the second or third release, and it was the Hokuto no Ken film, the feature-length film. And... I've got vivid memories of buying it on the Saturday morning. I watched it Saturday afternoon, and then in the evening, my parents had won tickets to go and see Starlight Express.
I'm looking forward to the rest of this story.
I was like,
already.
This is fucking mental. I just... that was an interesting day. So anyway... it translates as Fist of the Big Dipper. It's a Japanese manga series written by Bronson and illustrated by Tetsuo Hara. The Bronson is a pen name, and it's after Charles Bronson.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a big fan. So it's been broken down. Yeah. So all the 80s action heroes are getting a mention this week. It was first serialized in Weekly Shonen Jump in 1983 to 1988, and it had 245 chapters. And it was initially collected in 27 volumes. If you're not familiar with this series, it's set like in a post-apocalyptic world. It's very Mad Max-esque. Everyone's wearing the kind of like the shoulder pads, the cricket shoulder pads. And it's got mohawks and all that kind of stuff, like leather pads, spikes. It really takes a lot of visual influence from Mad Max 2.
Okay.
And if you look at the main hero, Kenshiro, he's styled... There's a bit of the styled after Sylvester Stallone, and you can see it in some of the earlier stuff. He's kind of got... His mouth is quite slanted, and it's kind of got that... You know, sometimes Stallone's face kind of looks a bit odd and off. It's kind
all
of got
time.
That...
Sorry
yeah.
if you're listening,
yeah.
Sly. Just
yeah,
sorry.
But he's kind of they've gone for that look. He's kind of like he's kind of grim face, and it centers around the main character, which is Kenshiro, and he's the only successor to like a deadly martial arts style known as Hoto Shinken, which is essentially the ability to strike opponents' vital points and cause various effects over their body. His style focuses on exploding, so like a force from within will blow up. So usually their heads are inflating and then exploding like overripe. Melons. What's odd about this series is it's extremely hyper-violent, but then sometimes they have these really weird moments that are quite childish, and you always wonder who was this series aimed at, because there's sometimes like they've got like Lin and Bat, these two child characters that kind of follow Ken around, and they do some really strange kind of kiddie jokes, and then the next minute someone's head's like imploding, and
yeah.
it's kind of odd mix. And I know it used to screen on TV. It was like one of the biggest sort of TV series at the time. But yeah, it's a real kind of odd mix that they often do sort of like the Eastern TV. They kind of have some really hardcore elements in.
But mix it up with this sort of innocent almost, isn't it? You know, this strange kiddie innocent element. Yeah, they do that a lot, don't they?
Yeah, it's really... Yeah.
To be fair, that's the reason I can't get into modern like anime stuff, is they always have like the daft character who's going for very bizarre laughs.
Yeah.
Well, I think Fist of the North Star did it in a slightly classier way than
definitely
seems to be done now.
It's nowhere near approaching what like it is now. Like you say, when it almost like the story stops to have this amusing moment
and then
carries on.
It's not even subversive, isn't it? It's just sort of suddenly a complete and utter change of pace. But
yeah,
some of them you almost expect it in them now, don't you, as well?
Yeah. I mean, like the anime and manga that was done in the 80s, it kind of feels like the proper stuff to me, and the more modern stuff is kind of, it's not really my cup of tea. Kenshiro spends the first part of the series essentially being like the lone wanderer, that kind of trope. He goes around right and wrongs, and the character is absolutely merciless. There's no pity or remorse for any kind of transgression. If you've done something wrong, he'll kill you. One of these kind of the various techniques that under the Hoto Shinten style, and things like they had the initial series syndicated, and they did the comic, and he gets his main rival, and it's like, well, this is really popular now. You've got to carry it on. So they started adding in other elements where there's a rival school of like five masters. You're under the Southern Star, who's like the opposite to him, and he has to fight them. Then he has to fight his Kung Fu brothers.
Yeah.
So it does go on. So yeah, it was translated into a TV series. It went from 1984 to 1988. That's 152 episodes. It went on to spawn a film, a live action film with Gary Daniels.
You've seen that? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
Loads of video games from the Mega Drive right up to the 360. There's a Korean knockoff TV series that they did. You should Google the intro to that or look it up on YouTube, because that's hilariously fucking bad. the series has been a massive influence to a lot of stuff. Like Ryu and Ken are based off of Ken and Shin from Fist of the North Star.
Last Sheriff took quite a bit from Fist of the North Star.
Yeah.
Huge influence.
They've got even the meme, You Are Already Dead, which harks back to what we did earlier when Kenshiro strikes someone with his technique, and then they're saying, what the fuck was that about? And then he says, you're already dead, and then their head explodes, or
the whole body explodes. When you're a kid, that's one of the first things that strikes you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's this martial art that makes people... heads explode.
Yeah,
that's just the greatest thing you've ever heard of in your life when you were a kid.
Because the kind of, if you like the idea of like super powered, overly muscled martial arts fighters going around post apocalyptic wasteland, like blowing people's heads up, this is the comic for you. It's it's bonkers. There's so many like stuff later in the series that gets absolutely crazy. But there's so many memorable characters, so much good visual kind of iconography, and there's one scene that always stick with me. There's a where the oceans have boiled, there's no more water anywhere. That's one of the things they fight for, like in Mad Max, and he's walking through like a decimated cityscape, and there's a huge skyscraper that has a like huge oil tanker impaled through it, and it's just kind of the things it suggests that what's happened before. It's really good. I'd say check out Fist of the North Star. I mean, it might be hard tracking down the comics of it, because it seems to, every company says, right, we're going to publish Fist of the North Star, and then they get to halfway, two-thirds through it,
yeah,
and lose the license or just don't want to do it anymore. So it might be better looking online for that kind of thing. But you can certainly look at the films or the animated TV stuff. That's all out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Highly
yeah.
recommended.
Ah, cool.
Nice. What about you, Tony? Nice.
I'm going to go with an old favourite, one that me and Dan have recently become buddies over, and that's the Destroyer series.
Yeah.
It's written by the original book series, which is a fucking thing unto its own, which I think there's about 160 books in it, in the series. I think I've read about 70, I'm going to say. Yeah, it was written by Warren Murphy and Richard Sapir. The first draft was written in 63, but the first novel wasn't published till 1971, which you read recently, didn't you, Dan?
I did, yeah.
And you actually... Copy. It reads fresh, doesn't it? It doesn't read like you're reading a book from the 70s. You know, no, it's quite good. Yeah. And the book series features Remo Williams, who appeared in the Fred Ward movie Remo Williams Unarmed. Was it Unarmed and Dangerous? Oh,
yeah.
I can't remember the name of it now. But yeah, in the actual book series, he's framed for a murder and he's sentenced to death, and he awakes from the chair to discover he'd been recruited by an organisation called CURE by Harold W. Smith. And CURE is basically only a handful of people, one of whom is his martial, who becomes his sort of martial arts sensei instructor called Chun, who is a Korean from a town called Sinanji, which is also the name of the martial art, which is a sort of seaside town in Korea, which is where all martial arts stems from. But Chun is just fucking crazy. Sinanji is the name of the town. He believes that all great... The great leaders of the world are supplied with assassins from Sinanji, which is he is one of them. Mm-hmm. And he loves soap operas, flirting with little old ladies and training Remo. These sort of three aims in life, really. And out of that, out of this sort of 100-something novels, which are just, you know, so popular in the States, they've tried a couple of times to do some comic series of it. And one came right at the end of the boom of Marvel black and white magazines, where we got sort of Deadly Hands of Kung Fu and all the horror ones and that sort of thing, called The Destroyer, The Adventures of Remo and Chun. I think there's 10 issues of it. But the talent they seem to get involved in was really impressive. They got Warren Murphy, who's the sort of daddy of all the books, who allegedly writes them all, but I think a lot of them are ghostwritten, especially towards the end. He wrote a big chunk of them, but the art in a lot of them is done by Lee Weeks, who I'm a big fan of, if you guys know him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did some recent Daredevil stuff, and he's a really, really great artist and has been for years. And he's one of those sort of artists other artists look up to. You know, he's got that sort of lean physicality to a lot of his characters and, you know, real good movement. So in it, Mike Manley does a lot of the art in some of them. Issue 2's Lucy Bates, based on number 64 in the book series. Issue 6 has got art by Carmine Infantino, and also... who's the other? He'll come to me in a minute. But he's got a lot of great artists. Chun is full of absolute fucking diamond things. He says one of the quotes I took from the comic today is, "Which of the many things you do not understand are you willing to talk about now?" Is one of the quotes, which I think is a quote that we could all be pleased of. It's in a sort of time when you had stuff like Mac Bolan, the Executioner, the Stony Men, and Phoenix Force, and all these sort of very sort of po-faced men's action, you know, sort of trash books, really, that ran into the hundreds sometimes. You've got this, which sits right in the middle of it, is essentially about a made-up martial art, but it's just so sort of blackly humorous and sarcastic, and very often very sort of bitingly satirical. It's got a real sort of anarchic and funny feel to it. I mean, there's things in it that happen, like allegedly Remo can run at 100 miles an hour at one point, you know, because he's so honed in relation to the martial art, you know.
Yeah.
And he's got this move. It always seems to mention what thick wrists he's got. Every book seems to mention, he's got these really thick wrists. And you're like, all right, okay, well, it must be mean something. And he's got all these little moves he uses. One where he turns a woman's hand over and suddenly she becomes very aroused. I think we mentioned that in the previous week.
Yeah.
But it's got that sort of real sort of 2000 AD darkness about it as well, which stuff like The Execution and The Survivalist, and believe it or not, there is a book series called The Penetrator, didn't really seem to have. For those that collect paperbacks, and there is a big market out there for sort of old paperbacks and stuff like that, and there is a market for people who still read this, they consider this to be a sort of real classic series. Murphy wrote, as well as writing a lot of the scripts, he used to write articles and stuff. He wrote a couple of supposed pieces written by Chun, who just sort of slags off the Western world and meat eating and all this sort of thing. There was later, beyond this sort of black and white series, there was a 4-issue color series, which really wasn't as good, but it's well worth picking up. I ordered mine off eBay, and I went around to this house. I thought I wasn't far away from where the person who lived who had the eBay. It wasn't Tybor. I wish it had been Tybor, but it wasn't. It was almost Tybor. You're near in a second. But the I went to the house to buy this sort of series of magazines because I'm really into the novels, like, you know, reading a novel every couple of days. And I thought I'd go and buy the comics, and knocked at the door, and Des Skin opened the door, and it was Des Skin's house. and I went in and bought them all, and then I left literally about 4 hours later, much more worse for wear, after just basically spending like 20 quid on a load of comics and drinking all of Des's beer. And we just sort of sat there and chatted about comics, and he was a gem, really nice guy. The series came out between 89 and 90. Like I say, it was well after the big boom. I think there was a Punisher comic magazine series out at the same time. Some pretty provocative covers. There's a lot of bikini-clad women. But the thing about Warren, he does it with a big sort of grin on his face. You know, there's this sort of... He understands the cliches of it all, and he just plays to them. If you get issue nine is the one that's got the interview with Warren Murphy, and he's very sort of, I suppose, curmudgeonly is the way I've written down here. He's sort of slightly grumpy character, but had a real flair, really good writing, and Lee Wicks kills it. Especially if you can get issue eight, it's got done with a sort of black and white wash that he does. There's two movies out there. There's the Fred Ward one, and then they did and I think at the time it was unreleased, a TV pilot that you watched recently, didn't you, Dan?
I watched it on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. Both pretty good. I'd probably put the Fred Ward one as the better one, would you?
Or? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And the Fred Ward one is I think it's a 15. It's pretty violent. There's a lot of sort of murdering and knifings and all this sort of thing go on. And in that, they say that Rimmer Williams is the 11th commandment, and that is thou shalt not get away with it, which I kind of like as a little sort of throwaway line. Yeah. So if you can find them, go on, mate. Sorry.
I was saying, I think there's a film in the works, isn't there, written by Shane Black.
Yeah, that would be great. I think he's the perfect person to do it as well.
He's brilliant. Yeah, he'd be absolutely excellent. I mean, one of the things that in that first book, there's a moment where he goes after the main villain through seducing his daughter. And there's no like, oh, I'll seduce the daughter to get through. It just does it. And there's no writing of any suggestion of what she should do afterwards, or just like, that's what I'm going to do. And it's just so cold-hearted.
Different times.
Different times. So I'm just going to seduce you so I can kill your dad. And once I've killed your dad, oh well.
Wish someone could seduce me.
But really, really interesting, fun read. There's a couple of times I was reading this and looking around thinking, fucking hell. Yeah. Can't believe we're reading this.
They're all fucking mental.
Yeah.
There's just whoever's given Warren Murphy the hump or Richard Sapir the hump, they just go after them. And they used to write a book about film industries or Germany or, you know, this sort of thing. But it's done with a real funny feeling to it, you know. Well worth looking. You can buy them for peanuts. So you get a couple of these books for a couple of quid on eBay. You know, and they've got great covers and, you know, really evocative of the period. Very good. There you go. That's my one. There's no website for that because everyone involved in it is probably long passed away, but there you go. It's I enjoy it. Yeah.
It's a classic Tony choice.
Quality recommend.
Yeah.
I'll have to check some of those out, actually.
Yeah. They're just sort of trashy good things to read on the train or on the bus, Vince. Yeah. You know, just sort of pass a bit of time. Good.
Do you just try to out me as a bus rider again?
You love the bus.
Yeah, good bus times.
Yeah.
My pick for this week is a book that I first heard about, I think, from the 11 o'clock comics guys.
Oh, yeah, that's where I heard about it as well, actually.
It was on the wish list for a long, long time. And then when I knew this show was coming up, so I went to the wish list and then went to eBay and found an absolute bargain that I don't think... It's actually probably the best deal I've had in quite some time.
There we go.
I won't tell you how much it was, but I found it for an absolute steal. But having looked through it and read it, I would have paid full price anyway. This book is Infinite Kung Fu by Kagan McLeod. Have you guys ever heard of this? I know Tony has.
Yeah.
No.
I cannot recommend this book enough. And it's about 430 pages. And it's put out by... who is it who puts it out? Top Shelf.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah. That was a surprise to me, actually, that they put that out.
It was a surprise to me, actually. I don't think... I haven't bought a Top Shelf book in quite some time, so...
Lies.
Different kind of Top Shelf. This came out, I think, in about 2011, 2012, I think, wasn't it? So it's few years ago.
Yeah.
I know Kagan's like a, he's quite a prolific illustrator in his own time. He hasn't done, I don't think he's done too much comic work after this.
Yeah, I've not followed him since this one, yeah.
But this is an opus, to be sure. Just to let, here's the synopsis that I found. The martial world is ruled by a mysterious emperor whose five armies are each headed by a cruel and highly skilled kung fu master. See, already you know that it's just like those sort of 70s kung fu movies anyway. Lei Kung, a soldier in one of these armies, grows tired of his master's evil ways and seeks enlightenment elsewhere. However, he soon finds that he's been chosen as the one who will put an end to the emperor's tyrannical rule personally. And the end of the synopsis says, fists fly, limbs are lost, and blood vessels burst in this tale of furious rivals, supernatural masters, walking corpses, and above all, raging kung fu. How can you not want to read this? And it very much reads, as soon as I started reading it, it was like I was watching one of those old Shaolin kung fu movies.
Yeah.
The spirit of it and just... The storytelling is bloody masterful on it. It's black and white, and obviously the star of the show is the artwork. I mean, Kagan's done everything on this, and I'm not sure. I don't know what the background was, whether it was individual issues or whether it was a webcomic or anything like that before. But he's got a real sort of brushwork sort of style. Have you noticed that, Tony?
Yeah, there's a wash to it as well, isn't there? Yeah, definitely.
There's washes, there's grey tones. And if you ask me, that's perfect for this, for the martial arts sort of action. Certainly the action scenes, because everything is so fluid and moves with such a grace and a speed. And his character design is brilliant as well. But when it comes to martial arts scenes, when two people fight, he's not afraid to spend 2 to 5 pages on that fight. And you've just got close-ups of people actually just fighting and throwing punches and stuff.
I'm looking at one at the moment, and there's what he's done is, you know, the sort of, if you watch a good 1970s Shaw Brothers movie, there's the blocking and the movement of the feet, and you know, and it's just perfect. He's got like the style down pat for those movies. You know, it's just choreography is just brilliant.
Yeah,
you know,
and you can feel the fights, really, even if they do, sometimes they pull out like one of those twisted moves where they just tap them in the chest twice and then their back explodes.
And at the moment I'm looking at Scorpion style, which is where he hits him with his ponytail and strangles him.
Well, there's that he fights one guy, because it is, you've got that journey, you've got the main character who at the beginning doesn't seem like much, and then he's built up and he's fighting different people throughout and learning more. I mean, I will be honest, I haven't read all of it yet, because like I say, it's a 430-page book. But it's just some of the crazy action in it. He fights someone and he sort of hits them in the chest, and then the person starts coughing, their back explodes, and then loads of centipedes come out of their face.
Yeah.
There are that zombies in it.
Move.
Yeah. There are lots of zombies in it. I know a lot of people think, oh, zombies, but you know, it's a good way to have lots of martial arts fights and, you know, taking out loads of people at once. But in this world, there are old masters who seemingly live forever because their body is always transported into the nearest corpse they can find.
Right.
So the evil bad guys are constantly sort of trying to find the freshest corpse.
If you go to page 323, someone chops off 9 heads in one go, in one panel.
It's fucking beautiful, this book. It is stunning. But the script and the way he's written it is totally in keeping with the sort of what you want to see. If, for instance, Dan, when you went into that, watching that Shaolin movie... It gave you exactly what you wanted, didn't it? What you expected.
Indeed. Yep. Yeah.
And this book, it does that. You know what I mean? It doesn't try to do a modern version or anything. It doesn't try to be too quirky with it. It's very, very true to its roots. There are quirky characters. Like one of the main characters is a guy called Moog Jugula, which is an amazing name anyway.
That's my middle name.
Well, I don't know whether you can do this, because he's an ancient master. he's a black guy with like a big long beard and like afro.
He rides a camel, didn't he?
He rides a camel.
And of course he does.
His martial art, he can pull off his limbs and throw them at people. He even pops his head off to headbutt someone. It's madness, but but it's still got that classic, almost like Kill Bill like sort of dialogue at one point. Like there's a big fight between two characters, like the big bad guy, and he says, "I've been expecting you. An impressive blade you wield, though I see you're one short of a pair. In thinking of you before setting out, I pondered, wouldn't it be nice if I could remember where I put the other half of your set? Then I did. Between your lover's ribs." that's dialogue that's straight out of these sort of stories, isn't it? I cannot recommend this enough. I mean, I don't think enough people know of this book.
Yeah, well, Top Shelf don't have a huge distribution, do they?
No,
and I can't imagine.
And looking at it, it's the sort of book that I would imagine would have been an absolute smash.
Yeah, I know 11 O'Clock Comics loved it, didn't they? They went about out for quite a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Kagan, I mean, he's on. You can find this on Amazon, etc. You can find some decent deals online for it, actually.
You might even find it for about £1 on eBay, do you? Or...
Well, yeah, if you're good like me. I couldn't believe that. Yes, I got this big book for about £3 all in all.
Nice.
Yeah. So... I think there's a few of our listeners who will have heard of it and will have read it. I know you can also get it digitally on Comixology. Top Shelf normally do like quite a few sales on Comixology, I think.
So, right.
But if you see it, pick it up. I'll probably do a similar thing that I did with Swordmaster. I'll post some images.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Of the pages, because it's hard to explain. I mean, me and Tanya have already told you some of the crazy ideas that go into it, but you kind of have to see it for yourself.
Right.
I think as soon as you see it, you'll be like, yeah, I need that on my book, on my bookshelf. So, and it looks lovely because it's a big, thick book. I don't have enough thick books. Don't say anything.
No
one say anything.
Lips are sealed.
Yeah. There's a first. Anyway, yeah, so that's my one, Infinite Kung Fu. Chris, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
It's a book that really, really grabbed hold of me. I'd heard loads about it. I'd kind of wanted to give it a go. I'd heard it had moments that were quite tongue-in-cheek and satirical of other superhero genre books. And I know this is supposed to be like a kung fu theme, but I'm going to recommend Invincible by Robert Kirkman and Ryan Ottley. Because it's just left everything else in the dirt. Really, it's incredible. It follows the...
You've only just started really recently. Did you start with the individuals or did you get an
omnibus? No, I bought this literally. It's like a slice of bread thickness compendium.
Yeah.
I think I got it for about £60. And I was talking to Ryan Ottley, the artist on Twitter, who's, you know, very open and very kind of good at kind of replying to messages and things. And he said that the best way to get started was to go for this compendium. I think it had the first, I don't know, 40, 50 issues in it, maybe even 60. And it's rare that something grabs me that much. I mean, I can read a monthly because it takes like 5-10 minutes out of your day. You enjoy it. You look forward to the next month. But this, I just couldn't put down. I was reading issue after issue after issue. So, I know that everybody's probably quite au fait with it already, but it's the story of a boy called Mark Grayson, who his father is already the world's kind of greatest superhero, Omni-Man, and he's kind of growing up in his father's footsteps, and it pretty much starts on the day that Mark gets his powers, which he's been waiting to happen. And I'm not gonna spoil the story but it's the first one that I read in a long time that had some jaw on the floor moments. Mm. And you know, when you have to reread a page, and you just, I want to experience that again. I want to get that shock back again. It's got so many twists and turns. It's hyper violent one minute, really funny the next. It pokes fun at superhero comics and then it embraces them warmly like an old friend. It really is phenomenal. I'm up to, I think, issue about 94 now, and I know that they're just running to the end of it at about issue 130 or around that mark.
I think it's 14-something.
Is it 14-something?
Yeah.
And so I'm waiting for the final compendium because I've just loved reading it like that as a slab and trying
is
to stay.
Is it an oversized compendium or is it a...
No, I don't believe so.
It reminds me of the Walking Dead compendiums they do. I think they
it's the same. It's Image and
is
it Skybound Media? They've put it out and Robert Kirkman writes it. Corey Walker does a few art duties on it, but Ryan Ottley's kind of the main artist after about issue 10. It's just phenomenal. It really is. It grips you and doesn't let you go.
I will say this. Obviously, recently it's been announced that that's being turned into... Is it films?
Film.
Apparently so. This week.
Is it a film, is it?
They've announced it.
Yeah. And obviously when they talk about it, obviously it's a Robert Kirkman property. But as always in the media, artists never get a mention. But this is one series where I think the artist... is such a pivotal part of what makes it
massive. Yeah.
To be fair,
it must be horrible not to get a mention and then get all those millions of pounds.
But there's been articles that have mentioned all the creative team, and then all the successive articles that have copied that one have basically just dropped the artists out of them.
Yeah.
So I think it's more on unscrupulous kind of news sites, not quoting them.
I mean, where we are
agreed
now, people are going to know who Robert Kirkman is, aren't they? So I mean, it'd be interesting to see how the movie develops. I mean, obviously movie development, we might not see anything for fucking years.
Might not see it at all.
But it's, I know Dan, it's your favourite series, isn't it?
It's going to be hard to see how they do the film.
Yeah, I know.
There's so many, the story arcs are quite quick. But there's always another theme bubbling throughout the back of one. So it delivers. It's got a lot of payoff.
The only thing I can think of, the first film would tackle him and his dad. To the end of that.
And that would
be that's the end of the first film.
Because that's quite a good relationship.
But in my eyes, you'd have to make it an R-rated film.
It can't be anything but. It really can't.
Yeah.
It really needs to be. It needs to be no holds barred. Because that's the saving grace, really, that separates it from everything else.
Maybe with the, obviously we've had the Deadpool and Logan successes and people are open to R-rated films. Maybe that's what tipped it over the edge.
Maybe,
yeah.
I can believe it would transfer well to the big screen, but really do yourselves a favor and pick that up.
Yeah,
because
I need to read more of it.
It is incredible. It really is. So much so that I went and spent a small fortune on Ryan Ottley's web store, but I bought a few prints for my studio at home, and he signs them all. He throws in loads of freebies with them and things like that. It's great.
He's an artist that's come on absolute leaps and bounds, and see it in the work. It's just
definitely.
Yeah, he's a big inspiration to
me. What's he going on to next?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd pretty much pick and choose?
Surely one of the big two are gonna.
Yeah.
Sweep
Is he one of the ones?
They've got space in the X-Men, haven't they?
Yeah.
I tell you, he'd do a good Spider-Man.
He would,
yeah.
He'd do a good most things, to be honest. I'd love to see him. I'd really love to see him tackle Batman and some of the villains in Batman.
Honestly, in the back of his books, or sometimes he posts up on Twitter convention sketches he's done of other characters, and it's that's fucking great. When an artist does their take on the character, and it's that's a different look to that character, but it's so. The artist style.
He's, I mean, when on the first few, whether it was purposeful or not, on the first few issues that he takes over, he's very much Corey Walker's style, the guy who originally started it. But then as you get round to about issue 30, 40, you really see him kind of embed his own style. And I mean, I know it's a style he must have had anyway, because he was doing Haunt with Kirkman and McFarlane before this. So, it's phenomenal stuff. The artwork is incredible. He's in my top five now of comic artists. I think he's amazing.
And there are no shortage of ways to get Invincible, whether it be individual books or omnibuses. I know there's several different types of omnibuses of that. And we've talked about it many times on this show, so you people have no excuse not to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That and everything by Valiant, I think,
is probably what's... a good EXO.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're coming across really well at the moment, aren't they, Valiant?
Yeah. Oh, I'm loving their stuff, yeah, really am. I've had to sort of hold back on mentioning them again, because I read their stuff every week and I absolutely love it, but I can't mention it on the show every week. You know, it's one of those sort of things. Yeah.
We have Tony's Valiant Corner.
Yeah.
I've still got Tokyo Ghost to read as well. I've got all the issues. I'm just waiting to read it. But I'm really, really excited to read that. I've heard some amazing things about it.
Isn't he doing an event at Orbital coming soon, I think?
Sean Gordon Murphy, or?
I've got a feeling he has. Yeah.
I'd like his artwork's phenomenal.
Yeah. I'll try and mention it in a second. I'll try and look it up.
Cool.
And then.
If you're planning to go to the Sean Gordon Murphy exhibition at Orbital, there's several different ways you can let us know about it. that was weak sauce, man.
No.
That was weak. I'll do better next week. But anyway,
please do.
I always strive to be better every week, Tony. But there's been 93 of these now. They're really wearing me down, man.
Guys, Tony. Dan, I meant to speech about this.
What's that?
Vince is getting a bit tired.
I know. I can do a rant about it.
Yeah.
I think he's going for my job.
Oh, never say that.
Just hear me out. You pipe down, Vince. You've had your say. 93 episodes worth. I'm thinking it's time for fresh blood. Yeah.
I love to see you fight over who edits this nonsense.
Well, we're looking at getting Chris Evans and Matt LeBlanc. We think it's going to be.
They're going to be free soon.
Yeah.
Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. It was another cracking one. We just went a bit movie crazy in the end, didn't we?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. But let us know what you thought about it at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, like Dan said earlier, if you've got any of those small press characters or any characters you want to get sent to our jam piece, send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We've had some cracking ones come in.
Literally just got one through from Sam Webster while we've been talking. There you go.
Boom. There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sam, and everyone else, because they're all looking great, including some new characters that have yet to have their own series yet. So, follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And please get involved in our group discussion. It's great every week. So I don't post on it that much. I just like reading it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
Sarah Millman come up with a good point about lettering.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, whenever anyone asks a question like that, it always gets lots of good responses. I'm really pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which has led to us having a discussion about a future guest. And side note, Milmo, you have to come back on.
Yeah, we want Milmo back on, don't we? Yeah.
So you can find the group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Get involved. And as always, thank you for listening to us on whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Podnose, on the moon, wherever you listen to us, leave a review. Leave a nice review, because it helps get the word out about the show. And the more people that know about this show, the more people get to know about great indie books. And Remo Williams.
Yeah.
So where can people find us online, on Twitter, etc.? Tony?
Right, I'm not going to big myself up this week. I'm going to say go to Stuart J. McCune's reading list, which had me chuckling this week. And he also references a rant that I gave. If you go to @Stuart, @StuartMcCune, McCune, and you'll get you can subscribe to his reading list, which is always well worth a look. And this week he goes off on one in a similar vein to that I go off on one occasionally. So have a look at that. And also big up to Gareth Hopkins and Jen Brown, who I did some strips with in Slice this week. So there you go.
Cool.
That's very, very nice of you, Tony. Mm-hmm. Dan, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice.
Very good.
You can find me at Jester Diablo on Twitter and find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Mr. Imber, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter as reckless_Imber and Instagram as Art of Chris Imber and online at ratemypoo.com.
I knew you from somewhere.
I knew you that. I've seen that somewhere before. I'd say, mate, I love following you on Instagram. There's always cracking stuff on there. Very good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I've got to get my ass on that.
It was it Guyver you put up today?
Yeah, yeah. I've just had a tasty commission come through.
Nice.
Someone's brought my Guyvers off me, and I'm doing 9 Ninja Scroll pieces for them.
Oh. Hey. Mm.
Back to the Ninja Scroll. Lovely.
Yeah.
Before I jump the gun, is there anything else we need to mention?
I just found that Orbital Comics thing. It's Saturday the 29th of April between 5 and 7. He's signing Sean Murphy at Orbital Comics, and it's followed by an after hours, 7 PM till late, director's commentary on Tokyo Ghost.
Cool.
So there you go. It's well worth going to. They have some great events at Orbital, and that'll be great, I think. And probably quite boozy, to be fair. Yeah.
So there you go, folks. It's been another cracking one. Thank you once again, Mr. Imber, for joining us.
Yeah, cheers,
thank you,
Chris.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yes. Yeah.
And to everyone out there, thank you for listening. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. We've got another cracking genre show to come next week, which we'll announce later in the week. And as always, just stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.